In tape number 7, we will be reading several articles from J.N. Darby's Collected Writings, volume number 16. The Failure of the Sons of Aaron, Leviticus 10. One of the blessed places in which we are set as children of God is that of being made priests unto Him. But whilst we are apt, and justly so, to consider this a position of highest privilege, we too often forget, practically, that it is one of constant service. Set in blessed nearness unto God, yet, and by that very nearness, the priests in Israel became mere servants of all the people. Jesus, though made an high priest forever after the order of Melchizedek, a priest and a king, is now a minister of the sanctuary after the pattern of the priestly service of Aaron. And we, priests and kings unto God, are set in the place of service as the sons of Aaron. We find in this part of Scripture the high priest and his sons, or Aaron and his sons, continually presented to us as a type of the church. Sometimes, however, they are very distinctly separated, as for instance in their consecration, Leviticus 8. Aaron is anointed without blood, having been sprinkled upon him, they with blood. This shows very definitely the perfectness of Christ in his own person to receive the fullness of the Holy Ghost. We can only have it by virtue of his perfectness and bloodshedding for us. I look at Aaron as a type of Christ, Aaron and his sons, of the whole church. Failure is ever the character of the ways of man, and the chapter before us presents it in most striking as well as touching circumstances. The sons of Aaron were set in the place of grace, and there in the place of grace they failed. The offering of Cain, as of every natural man, is the witness of the most perfect insensibility of heart as to what he was before God. All that we can offer of our natural hearts is the sacrifice of fools. The contrary was the case with Abel. His more excellent sacrifice consisted in this: it confessed that death must come in between the soul and God. And so it ever must. There can be no worship without it. In all circumstances, death must come in between us and God. Death is for us now, as it was against us before, because Christ has tasted death. Forasmuch as the children are partakers of flesh and blood, he also himself likewise took part of the same, that through death he might destroy him who had the power of death, that is, the devil, and deliver them who through fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage. Hebrews 2:14-15. It was by the grace of God Christ tasted death. In his death we see the grace of God, though it was on account of sin. All that was against us is gone. The Lord Jesus Christ turns everything he touches into blessing. It was from the altar of burnt offering that coals were taken to kindle the incense that went up before God. Strange fire, not arising from this source, was inadmissible. All our worship, our singing a hymn together, for instance, must have this character, the savor of Christ. God accepts it as such, though full of failure. Everything must be salted with fire. If it does not go up through fire, it cannot stand. Apart from it, there is only condemnation and judgment, the character of the sin of Nadab and Abihu. The fire tries every man's work, and if judgment has already done its work on Jesus, we have nothing but the sin's work. And if judgment has already done its work on Jesus, we have nothing but the savor of Jesus to be in before God. This is the real value of our place before the Lord. And this is our joy. It is the place of grace. But then it was here that the sons of Aaron failed. And Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, took either of them his censer and put fire thereon and put incense therein and offered strange fire before Jehovah, which he commanded them not. Verse 1. There was the separation of service from the power of its acceptance, and thus failure in the place of grace. Failure not on God's part, but on man's. Man has failed under law. That might be expected. But when brought near to God in grace, there also has he failed. The sin of Nadab and Abihu, in this the awful type of the professing church, was sin against the very grace of God, want of respect in the sense of their position, of reverence of God. Our place, though that of perfectness of joy, is ever that of reverence. Hebrews 12:28-29. But how is the sin met? As must needs be in judgment. Judgment coming forth from the very place of grace. There went out fire from before Jehovah, and they died before Jehovah. Verse 2. It is a terrible character the Lord puts on here. The strange fire met in result by holiness, the true fire of God's judgment. They died before Jehovah. Awful thought. He was found to be a God of judgment in the very place of blessing and of grace. And thus must it ever be with that which takes falsely a place before Jehovah. For after all, though it is a place of grace, it is still one of judgment. I will be sanctified in them that come nigh me. We have ever to judge ourselves, that we be not judged of God. 1 Corinthians 11:31. We read, But as he which hath called you is holy, so be ye holy in all manner of conversation, because it is written, Be ye holy, for I am holy. And if ye call on the Father, who without respect of persons judgeth according to every man's work, pass the time of your sojourning here in fear. 1 Peter 1:15-17. The Lord always judges according to the place into which we are brought, according to the position in which we stand. And so do we of others in some sort. For instance, I judge of those who are within my house differently from what I do of those without. I say, not to a stranger, but to one brought into my house, You must have clean habits to live here. God is dealing with us on the ground of grace, yet of holiness. For holiness is with us as much a part of grace as any other blessing. Be ye holy, for I am holy, is the expression of intimacy, and comes not merely in the way of command. Grace must make us holy, partakers of His holiness. See Hebrews 12. It is not God requiring man's holiness, but making us partakers of His. What could we wish more? Love does it, and we are made partakers of that which separates God from all that is inconsistent with Himself. Holiness, not mere innocence. Innocence is the ignorance of good and evil. You would not say that God was innocent, but holy. He makes us partakers of His holiness. It is His holiness, the knowledge of evil as He knows it, and ability to rise above it. The holiness is as much a part of the grace as the love that does it. They died, and Moses said unto Aaron, This is it that Jehovah spake, saying, I will be sanctified in them that come nigh me, and before all the people I will be glorified. And Aaron held his peace, verse 3. There was silence as to the place of intercession. There is a sin unto death. The church has to be silent. 1 John 5:16. God has taken the cause into His own hands. He has acted in His holy place. And all that man can do is hold his peace. And Jehovah spake unto Aaron, saying, Do not drink wine, nor strong drink, thou, nor thy sons with thee, when ye go into the tabernacle of the congregation, lest ye die. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations, and that ye may put difference between holy and unholy, and between unclean and clean, and that ye may teach the children of Israel all the statutes which Jehovah has spoken unto them by the hand of Moses. Verses 8 through 11. Wine and strong drink, all that excites the flesh, that does not belong to the cleanness of spiritual apprehension and judgment becoming those who go into the sanctuary, must be put away. I believe we are often hindered going into God's presence by this drinking of wine. The moment there is that which acts on the flesh and excites nature, the going to find pleasure and joy in things, harmless even in themselves, no matter what, nature may take up anything, there is wine and strong drink, that which would put us out of the place of spiritual discernment, and it is inadmissible. There are 10,000 things which may thus excite. Eloquence, for instance. If excited by eloquence, this would hinder the enjoyment of truth. The same truth, were it presented without it, and thus that which is of Christ would pall on the taste. Eloquence is not in itself a wrong thing, and yet Paul says, And I, brethren, when I came to you, came not with excellency of speech or wisdom, declaring unto you the testimony of God, For I determined not to know anything among you save Jesus Christ and Him crucified. And I was with you in weakness and in fear and in much trembling. And my speech and my preaching was not with enticing words of man's wisdom, but in demonstration of the Spirit and of power, that your faith should not stand in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God. There is a vast deal connected with the things of God that is not like this, a vast deal which after all is wine and strong drink, and it unfits for the sanctuary. Whatever has not the real, calm, spiritual joy fit for the presence of God is so, Look at it. We see it connected with all the forms of false worship. Again, thought as to the beauty and elegance of the edifice where we meet for worship, etc., has the same character. It acts on nature, and whatever does this cannot be fit for the presence of God, cannot be carried into His sanctuary. So of all things around which hinder the power of spiritual discernment, though not in themselves wrong, we might be in a lovely place and not think of it, then it is not strong drink. The object of this instruction is not merely as to our acting rightly. The condition of mind which gives the capacity of judging between clean and unclean depends on the absence of these things. The capacity of learning through fellowship with God in the sanctuary to put difference between holy and unholy. So the apostle prays for the saints at Colossae, that they might be filled with the knowledge of His will, in all wisdom and spiritual understanding, that they might walk worthy of the Lord unto all pleasing. We can never give the least justification to sin and say, the flesh is in us, and we could not help it. For there hath no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that ye are able, but will with the temptation also make a way of escape, that ye may be able to bear it. The theory of the Christian is this: the flesh should never be discovered but in the presence of God, where it is always in the presence of grace and of holiness too. This is the true power of our walk. It is not any particular measure of attainment. It is simply a man walking according to his communion who never gets into the weakness of the flesh, for the flesh is known only before God and not before Satan. When I learn the flesh thus, I drink into the opposite of it, the grace of God, and so go forth in the strength of what is in God and not in the shame and weakness of what is in myself. But have we not found, often found, an incapacity to judge according to the mind of God, where there was no failure in precept, a spiritual incompetency? Alas, my friends, we have been content to drink wine and strong drink, and thus our spiritual faculties have become darkened. There is no proper worship that does not take in God, Christ, and the whole family of Aaron, the church. It is a common feast, if true. So in Ephesians 3, that ye may be able to comprehend with all saints what is the breadth and length and depth and height, and to know the love of Christ which passeth knowledge, that ye might be filled with all the fullness of God. How can I comprehend with all saints if I leave out any? I cannot separate from them without diminishing my own sense of the fullness of the love of Christ and of God. If I leave one out, he is Christ's joy. And here we fail. Again, there is, in a certain sense, a priestly way in which we have to bear the sins and sorrows of our brethren, not, of course, as to atonement. That was Christ's alone. The blood carried inside was Christ's alone. But still, there is a true sense in which we have to bear them. And in this, I believe, above everything else, we fail. It is not only that Nadab and Abihu offered strange fire. Eleazar and Ithamar were not like them, and yet their failure is recorded. And Moses diligently sought the goat of the sin offering, and behold, it was burnt. And he was angry with Eleazar and Ithamar, the sons of Aaron, which were left alive, saying, "Wherefore have ye not eaten of the sin offering in the holy place, seeing it is most holy? And God has given it you to bear the iniquity of the congregation, to make atonement for them before Jehovah. Behold, the blood of it was not brought in within the holy place. Ye should indeed have eaten it in the holy place, as I commanded." Verses 16 to 18. The rule as to the sin offering was this: if the blood was carried inside to be sprinkled before Jehovah, the body was carried without the camp to be burnt. But in the sin offering for offenses, the priest was to eat it. And in this, the sons of Aaron had a share. We get the pattern for the exercise of grace in the saints as to the failure and sins of their brethren in John 13. "If I, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, ye also ought to wash one another's feet. Where there is defilement seen in a brother, there should ever be this washing by us. But it is impossible that there can, unless in spirit, we bear before the Lord all the burden of the fault and sin we desire to confess." Washing the feet is not atonement. And here we all fail in the use of this priestly service. Suppose I were really walking in the power of the place in which I am set. If I see sin in my brother and go to pray for him, I find him identified with Christ as represented to the world. The garment of Christ is soiled. The honor of Christ is affected. The joy of Christ is hindered. All is spoiled in that sense. Communion with Christ is lost. It is a terrible thing to see the saints of God dishonor Christ thus. Well, now, it is to bear the misery and sorrow of all this as though I had been in the sin myself. Love gets into the place of the sinner, and his sin becomes the occasion of the outgoings of the heart in intercession to God, of the working of love. Suppose a child in agony. The mother sees it thus, distressed, convulsed by pain, and though she herself has no pain of body, she suffers far more than it in pain of mind, in agony of heart. Thus should it be with us, in feeling with the saints, when writhing under false doctrine or unworthiness of walk. All is borne by Jesus. But then we should identify ourselves with Jesus in dealing about the sin, in feeding on the sin offering. See Daniel in his confession. Did he say, "Israel hath sinned"? No, but we have sinned. To us belongeth confusion of faces. We have rebelled. And this is our place. When Moses charges Eleazar and Ithamar with the sin, Aaron comes in verse 19, and answers for them. He lays it all upon himself. And so Christ for us. He makes himself responsible for it all. It was, however, their privilege to have eaten of the sin offering as it is ours. We are given this portion. God, in the riches of his grace, not only blesses us, but uses us. We are fellow workers under him. Paul plants, Apollos waters, God gives the increase. Whilst it is God who has done it all. If a man was converted, whose joy was it? Ye are our joy. It was Paul's joy. Paul had not redeemed them, but he had the joy of love. In giving us this service of love, we have his Spirit in us, and so the joy of love is ours. But it is not merely that we should go out and preach the gospel to sinners. Preaching the gospel answers to the ministry of apostleship, whilst teaching and admonishing the saints answers to that of priesthood. Prayer for a brother is ministry of love in priesthood. If it be a matter of intercession, we ought to bear all the iniquity of it on our own hearts before the Lord. Thus the very sin itself becomes the occasion of the outflowing of love and not of judgment. But is it not true that we all have failed? Whilst the outward professing church has offered strange fire before the Lord, have we known how to eat the sin offering for our brethren? Have we not been charging them with the offense in righteousness, laying it down to them as under law, instead of eating the sin offering in the holy place? Grief should not hinder our acting thus in priestly service before the Lord. But let us take care also that the joy of nature does not, the wine and the strong drink. Again, I say, have we not shrunk from bearing the iniquity of our brethren in intercession before the Lord, from eating the sin offering in the holy place? How little do the faults of a dear brother pain us as our own? Have we really pleaded as feeling the evil in the intercession of grace? How seldom do we thus deal with it, standing as it were in the gap? There is a vast deal of failure in all of us as to this, abundant failure. There is not that sense among us of the identity of Christ with his saints, which would put us thus in the place of intercession. But the voice of Aaron is lifted up, verse 19, and it prevails. Moses, the commander and requirer, is content. In verse 20. So, in hearing the voice of our Aaron, when lifting up on our behalf, God is content. And here is our comfort under the sense of it all. Peace is heard again. But if it be so, the sense of that should not make us think lightly about the sins of our brethren.